Hello, happy Advent, and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and it's time for some flannel panel. Our usual guests, Joe Heschmeyer and Chris Check, are here, and we're getting ready to discuss the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. Some of it is specifically Catholic news. Some of it is just news that needs a little flannel panel conversation about it in order for society to be able to settle on a reasonable answer, because that's what we do here. We help society. Chris Check is president of Catholic Answers. Chris, thanks for being here for the flannel panel.
I think in my 57, nearly 58 years, that's the first time someone has suggested that I'm helping society.
Really?
I want to thank you for that,
Well, I've met your sons, and even if indirectly, you have helped society by producing such fine young men.
Well, Jackie did all the heavy lifting.
And also with us, Joe
and
Heschmeyer.
Continues to in the marriage, by the way, I should say.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Well, she brings all the personality to the marriage.
Yeah,
you bring
yeah.
a lot of other good things, I imagine. Joe Heschmeyer is our other guest. Joe, of course, is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, author of a bunch of things. Hi, Joe.
I'm afraid to even ask your insights into my marriage and family life after that assessment.
Well, I'm just going to say this, Joe. I'm disappointed that it's only you, because just moments ago, it was you and your oldest child, and he's the sweetest looking
youngest
boy.
Youngest child.
Oh, yeah, your youngest child. And was he wearing a koala sweatshirt? What was that? Was he a koala?
I think it's a bear.
Oh, he's a bear.
A disproportionate amount of his winter clothing is animal themed in ways that you just think like, oh, I guess you could do that as an adult too, but nobody ever does. Like,
I know.
It's like a thin line between a winter coat and a costume at this age.
Yeah, but all clothes should be. I don't know. I don't think we should get over
it. We should start wearing animal themed clothing.
You know, we should have some kind of clothing theme for this show where we all like wear the same thing.
All right. For January, let's work on that. I do want to say that I had the good fortune. Did I already mention this on the flannel panel? I can't recall, but this is one of the benefits of senility. You get to repeat yourself. So I had the good fortune to be with the Heschmeyer family in Kansas a couple of months ago and went to Mass with them on Sunday. And Joe's oldest daughter, who is about, what, two and three?
Three. Yeah, yeah. She just turned three.
It was great. Right at the time, at the end of Mass, she announced to her father, Dad, it's time to go.
Good for her. Well, she did it at the end, at least.
She has a keen sense of the liturgical schedule there in the Heschmeyer.
She does. You know, her favorite prayer to pray along with is the St. Michael prayer at the end of Mass. But it's probably not a coincidence that it's the one at the end of Mass.
Yeah.
She likes it partly because it mentions spiritual warfare. And so she will interrupt it two-thirds of the time when we get to the devil. And she'll go, the devil? Is that the one who goes? And then she hisses as loud as she can. Pretends she doesn't know the question.
No, that's good. You got to have that signal that tells you when you're a kid, like, well, I don't know where we are, but if I hear St. Michael the Archangel, I know we're just about at the end of this.
When she was like, she had not even turned two yet. She was like late one at the Agnus Dei. She would turn to me and say, is Mass done, Dad? And I'd say, not yet. And she'd go, almost. And it was like that every day.
Yeah.
It was just like a little routine.
Yeah. Well, she's learning then, because at Agnus Dei, it's still a ways to go.
Yeah. I'll give out the number if you want to. If we talk about something you want to talk about, we'll try to get you on. But I'm not making any promises because I'm just not good at getting people on the. I'm not good at any part of managing this show when Chris and Joe are here. And don't say, oh, what's different from any other day, Joe? I know your attitude about my hosting. 888-318-7884.
I love your hosting,
is the number. Thank you, Chris. Yeah. And I love your hosting.
And me and Ann, we love your hosting.
Oh, yeah. Can I say her last name?
No? I don't know.
I don't know.
You're a fan.
She's a woman of very fine taste.
She is.
Very good.
A lovely woman. Ann, we love you.
And I hope you're well, Ann. The number 888-318-7884. All right. So the way this works is I propose a story and see if these two want to talk about it. We've never yet had them not want to talk about a story. As a matter of fact, stopping them is usually the hard part. But usually most of what is said is unrelated to the story that I mentioned. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Big news today. Did it come today or yesterday about P-22? I think it was today.
I think actually this is about a week old.
Oh, is it really a week old?
Yeah, you just don't keep up with
I don't look
wildlife
at the news
in Los
like
Angeles.
20 minutes before this show, I start looking at the news to see what we should talk about. Do you know about P-22 there in
I don't. I saw that and I was trying to figure out what Pope that was.
P-22, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
Right.
That's a long time ago. That's probably so far back it's a martyr pope. P-22
is a mountain lion.
Is a mountain lion.
Well, well, was a mountain, was a mountain lion.
Is now a rug. But no, I shouldn't have said it that way.
Oh my gosh!
That was that
you,
showed
the,
a real insensitivity
the woke
on my
are
part.
Coming after you, Cy Kellett.
In Los Angeles, Joe, downtown in Los Angeles,
the city just north of us.
Yeah, there lived a mountain lion in the midst of the human population, and
no, not downtown.
Well, pretty much. I mean, Griffith Park.
Yeah. So it's surrounded by development, residential
right.
and urban development.
But I think one thing—
But Griffith Park is an open space.
There's a lot of open space out there. And Los Angeles is actually full of open space.
It is.
And probably full of delicious raccoons as well. But I mean, one of the things people don't know about Los Angeles is, like, frequently there are bears in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. You know, like, within Los Angeles, you see on the news, oh, a bear in the swimming pool and all that. So, but P-22 was, did you just put a firearm on the thing called a P-22? I wasn't aware of that firearm. Did they name it after the mountain lion? But first of all, a great outpouring of grief over P-22 that I have mixed feelings about. I'm not exactly sure how to feel about it. I think it's good to love animals. I know it's good to love animals in a certain sense, you know, an appropriate love of them as gifts from God. But I'm not so sure about the international outpouring of grief over the death of P-22.
Well, there was some debate too. So P-22 was not well and had lived the life expectancy that you might expect from a mountain lion
in a city,
and had a number of internal organ problems, including with his liver. But it looked like the death blow. Or
you got hit by a car.
Sorry, real quick question. How do you or anyone else know the liver state of P-22? Were there doctors regularly involved?
Yes, there were.
Well, he was tagged.
He wore a collar so they'd know where he was.
So he was struck by a
California panda.
He was struck by a vehicle and was discovered injured, and then they tranquilized him and then did an examination and said, this is, and you know, that they even thought of this, I guess, really goes to your question, Cy. But then the veterinarian surgeon said, he has so many other problems that the surgery is not equal to the effort.
Right. In Canada, they would have killed him years ago, but they don't let the elderly get very far in Canada.
Well, something to say here, mountain lions are not endangered in California.
You know, that's what I saw these people say, endangered mountain lions. We got mountain lions all over the place.
Nor, by the way,
they attack people like at least once a year in Orange County, which is perfect. Like, if you're going to attack people as a mountain lion, do it in Orange County.
Nor, by the way.
Why? I don't know enough about people in Orange County.
Cy is making friends all over our listening area.
That's just how people in San Diego County feel about Orange County.
Nor, by the way, are bobcats. In fact, we have bobcats over here.
Oh, bobcats all over the place.
In the park where I'm a volunteer docent, trail guide or whatever, Mission Trails Regional Park. And we have bobcats there. I've never seen one, but I know they're there. And they get captured on the camera. And
I saw one in the subdivisions near the office in El Cajon.
Sure.
We were driving around.
Well,
and there was one just like walking around in a residential area.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not from a place where bobcats exist. And I was like, is that a wolf? And I was like, no, that doesn't make sense.
Is that a wolf?
It's not a fox.
Hang on a second there, Joe. Are you sure what you saw was not a coyote?
Have you seen the size of a bobcat?
I mean,
it doesn't look like a wolf.
I think it was like, I've seen coyotes before. It's possible.
Confuse a bobcat with a wolf?
You get a great look.
Okay, I think you saw a coyote, which are even more powerful.
Wait, what time of the evening was it that you saw it?
It was mid-morning.
Oh, okay.
In any case, in Illinois, you can hunt bobcats. It's permitted to hunt them because there are a lot of them. And actually,
they're really cool animals.
They're lovely, but you can hunt them, and their pelts fetch a good price. And what's more, the Department of Natural Resources has an interest in controlling the bobcat population for reasons like the protection of livestock and domestic pets and things of this
and
nature.
Babies.
Yeah.
Where I live, we have coyotes. And like where sometimes my wife and I'll go up to the top of the hill and go to mass at the monastery. And there's a little old lady coyote up there, just walks around, looks at you, you know, keeps going. And I think that that's very nice. I like it.
They're vermin. Coyotes are vermin.
They are not.
They're vermin.
I don't like cats. I don't like cats of any kind.
Coyotes,
especially cats that look like they could do violence. And I mean house cats or any cat that looks at me like they might attack. I don't know. I'm scared of cats. So bobcats terrify me. But
to your question, some I don't know, cultural manifestation of affection for this cat who has been a kind of a Los Angeles mascot is appropriate. But the effusiveness and then the opportunity to talk about shared habitat and biodiversity, et cetera, has taken this thing beyond the realm of the fact that this was a mountain lion, one, and two, it was an old one that was going to die anyway, and they are not endangered in California.
No.
They are majestic animals, by the way. They're absolutely beautiful. Yeah. One more bobcat thing. So a bobcat is similar to a puma, am I mistaken?
No, a puma is a mountain lion.
A mountain lion is a puma. Is that also a panther?
A panther, well, an American panther, yes,
right.
is called a.
So do you know
and
what?
A catamount.
A catamount is also, yeah. Right.
Okay, right. So I'm.
Or, and there used to be a guy in the cartoons that called them pumas. Well, who was the guy in the cartoon? I hate pumas. I don't remember who it was.
Do you know what's? Do you know what American city is called the Panther City?
Jacksonville? No.
Fort Worth, Texas.
Detroit.
Fort Worth, Texas.
Yes.
Is the Panther City.
Do you know? It has nothing to do with the Panther population.
Why?
Because some Yankee living in Dallas at the time published in the Dallas newspaper that Fort Worth was such a boring city that a panther could walk down the main street and no one notice. No one would notice. So Fort Worth ran with this. This was, you know, 100 years ago or whatever.
And they just made it a positive thing.
Yeah, and they said it's called the Panther City.
First of all, I feel like if your city has a panther walking down the street and no one even notices, that's probably a really exciting city.
Yeah,
that's not a boring city.
I don't think it doesn't bear a lot of examination.
Newspaper articles on a bear in a pool. I feel like that's a slow news day.
But
a panther going into the city and,
You know, it is kind of, one thing I do feel about P-22, and part of why I want to talk about this, in addition to it just being the most important news in the world, that P-22 died, there is something about modern society where we're so cut off from nature that there is a kind of desperation for anything that brings us into contact with nature. I mean, anything, any kind of contact with nature. And having a mountain lion living in the city, you know, I think that was, there was some way in which that made the city feel less like a city and more like nature.
You know, related to this, of course, is the amount of the industry that is built up around contact with nature.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So,
that's a good point, Chris.
And here, a little guilty as charged, though not nearly as much as some. I mean, I do have shoes for hiking and this sort of thing and poles. And of course, my predecessor, Carl Keating, was the guy that kind of went overnight hiking.
That's called camping.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you knew the name.
I got that out of my system in the Marine Corps, Si.
I imagine you did.
And then there's a lot of opportunity for virtue signaling with Patagonia or whatever the various, look how much I love the environment brands are and this sort of thing. But so this is a manifestation of becoming unmoored from the truth, and so our enthusiasms tend to go one way or the other. So it's
good
to want to be in nature, and I actually make a resolution for next year, my friends, spend more time in nature. You will be happier.
Yeah.
And less anxious, by the way. That's a scientific fact.
Yeah, and constantly trying to chase nature away in all of its forms to live in the artificial
world. That's another enthusiasm.
It's not healthy for us. Yeah. It's not good for us. All right, well... Go ahead.
On the theme of state animals, Missouri's state symbol is, or the state wonder dog is Jim the Wonder Dog. And I'm not making this up. You can actually go on the Missouri Secretary of State website. If you look up Jim the Wonder Dog, there's an entire article devoted to him. He was officially declared this by the Missouri General Assembly in 2017. This is a dog who was born in 1925, a Llewellyn setter who allegedly had psychic powers. And so I just wanted to say, you know what? We don't have pumas. But we do allegedly have one psychic dog who predicted every Kentucky Derby race winner correctly.
Congratulations
our,
on that.
Our state animal could cream your state animal.
Are you talking about the grizzly?
The California grizzly. Which it doesn't exist anymore. But
oh, you know what?
It's actually, a lot of dead animals now on this show. Maybe we should move on. I'm starting to feel sad.
The California flag has one bear. The Missouri flag has two. So it's a 2-1 fight there.
By the way, the best animal in Southern California, if you're looking for the best animal.
Those little lizards that run around?
Sea lion. I love sea lions.
Oh, they're awful creatures.
They smell terrible, wow.
But
I love them.
They just make a mess of the bed.
They do
disgusting.
Smell terrible.
They are, but they're wonderful. All right, right back. Now we're going to get into some more news, some of it even more serious than the demise of P22 on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Are you ready to spread your wings? Wings is the weekly newsletter that's packed with exclusive news, program information, features, and updates of all that's going on at the Global Catholic Network. To sign up, go to EWTN.com, click subscribe, enter your name and email address, and you'll start getting your wings every week. Get your wings today. It's the weekly newsletter from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. It's Flannel Panel today. Flannel Panel is when we get Joe Heschmeyer and Chris Check in here, and we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective and more news to discuss. And I have to say, it's hard for me to do this show during Advent, especially as we're approaching Christmas, because one of the great features of Flannel Panel is dudgeon. And I'm having trouble working myself up into a state of dudgeon right now. But if you want,
Cy's been on a constant diet of eggnog all Advent. So
no, there's been chocolate in there. There's eggnog and chocolate. But I do want to talk a little bit about. It is a bit disturbing to see the level of current reporting on corruption in the Vatican. And so I want to throw a couple out at you. I mean, there's actual trial where one cardinal has to testify against another cardinal in a criminal trial. Another thing about a cardinal who this to me also, if this is true, is about the lowest you can go. Took hundreds of thousands of dollars from a charity for the poor. Half a million euros, which is what, $83 now? but spent it on refurbishing his apartment.
Yeah.
You just feel like it's gross what's going on in the Vatican. I feel for Pope Francis because I really don't think he is in any way at all that kind of person. I mean, you couldn't imagine Pope Francis going, I'll just appropriate this 500,000 euros for my apartment.
I don't know if the apartment is the most egregious thing in Archbishop Paglia's. It's Archbishop or Cardinal? Archbishop Paglia.
I believe Archbishop.
Yeah. Oh, I apologize. I thought it was Cardinal.
In his history, the desecration of the cathedral of the town in which he was archbishop, the name of which I'm forgetting now, with the homoerotic fresco.
Oh, that's the same guy?
Yeah.
Oh.
Again, he's got it himself painted in there.
Yeah, he has it in the nude, but for his zucchetto. And being lifted up in a net of other naked figures by Jesus into heaven is that's a desecration of a church. So quite apart from spending money that should have gone to the poor on your apartment, both are very bad. But God bless our friends J.D. Flynn and Ed Condon at the Pillar. For shining a light on this wickedness in a sober and fact-based way, without indulging in the anti-Francis polemics that often attaches to these kinds of stories, and just making it known to the faithful. Those two guys are doing great work for the reform of the church.
I think they're growing to have more reporters and analysts working with them, too, to figure these stories out.
Very, very patient journalist, by the way, particularly in this story. I know it took a long time.
It does offend some people, though, that they're doing this kind of reporting. I think the attitude you get sometimes is, why just keep dredging this dirt up on people? And I feel like I know the answer to the question, but I want to hear what either of you has to say to that objection. Like, because this is a matter of dredging up dirt. That's exactly what they did. They dredged up dirt, but and it's really gross. But should we be doing that in the church? Should Catholic journalism be doing that, Joe?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, so for instance, the Catechism talks about like when you can share negative information about another person, and you have to have a just cause. Like you can't just be, oh, here's this salacious rumor, you're going to really love this, or you're going to be really outraged by this. That's not good enough. But if you're sharing this because this is true, it's newsworthy, and shining a light on this situation may actually lead to a positive and productive reform, that's different. And so it is something we have to be, not just they, but we have to be even like, well, why am I consuming this? Why am I commenting on this? Why am I sharing this? Why am I, you know, why are we talking about this right now? You know, those kind of questions. It cannot just be this thing happened and therefore I'm going to talk about it. There has to be a legitimate reason. Now, if something is extremely public, then yeah, it's fine. It's not a big deal. But especially if you're talking about private information. And so I say that because, you know, you've got, if you imagine like the media at one end of the spectrum, you've got the media covering up FDR having polio, JFK having mistresses, Catholic priests doing abominable things to children. And at the other end of the spectrum, you have the constantly looking for dirt on everyone. I just heard it called outrage archaeology, where you go digging for something to be outraged by. And so we don't want to go to either of those extremes. I don't think the guys at the Pillar err on either of those extremes. I think they do a pretty good job of showing what that virtuous mean looks like, where they actually run some, if you want, feel-good pieces. Those usually aren't the ones everybody wants to talk about.
Oh, they'll do wonderful interviews with like holy bishops who are doing great work all over the world.
Yeah. And everyone's just like, yeah, give us the scandal.
Yeah, right. no dirt today.
I think in this case, Archbishop Hogg is a public figure. Not only did he put the scandalous mural in his or fresco in his cathedral, apart from its sort of homoerotic content, it's theologically problematic. Or I guess those two things are probably associated. But also, this is the man who presided over the recent, now the names of these dicasteries keep changing, Joe, so you're going to have to help me out here. But the recent academic, I'm putting the scare quotes up here, conference proposing that the church's teaching on the intrinsic evil of artificial contraception is not infallibly taught.
Oh, yeah, right. You're kind of undermining.
Yes, exactly, and can be and potentially might be changed. And in fact, his own whoever managed the Twitter feed for this dicastery, whatever intern they had managing the Twitter feed. Now, the person ended up retracting it, but several months ago, you all remember, well, you know, the church changed its teachings on geocentrism and heliocentrism, and so it's quite possible that she could change her teaching on contraception. Well, the church never taught one world system one way or the other.
No, of course it's, not.
It is, yeah, straw man. But nonetheless, so he is a... He is a theologically heterodox figure, or at least is permitting heterodoxy, and now also the author of a couple of scandals. So in the case like this, I think the faithful deserve to know this story.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, is there a situation in which a bishop of the Catholic Church, particularly a high official of the Catholic Church, steals from the poor to redecorate his apartment? Is there any situation in which that would not be news? Like
it's a good question. I'm inclined to think it would always be news. If there were to be an exception to it, a situation where there was some kind of misappropriation of funds, the bishop was maybe honest and forthright about it and sought to make amends, just said, you know, I really sinned, I erred in this way, I'm going to try to make this better. I don't think in a situation like that, where he's the one kind of in the driver's seat of doing the right thing, you want to then go ahead and like shame him to the public. If someone robs you, you do have kind of a right to know you've been robbed. And in this case, he's robbed the poor of the world.
Joe, is it possible? Is it possible for us, Joe, to interpret this situation in the light of the Council of Jesus Christ, who advises a course of action when you've been the recipient of a transgression? So he says, "Well, look, go and talk to the fellow, and if it works out, good. But if it doesn't, eventually you have to bring in witnesses."
Yeah, it's true, and I think it's a bit of advice from our Lord, Matthew 18.
All right, right back with more. I don't want to finish with this one too quickly, but lots of news and reactions from the flannel panel right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
The recent decision by the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade was a monumental victory for the pro-life movement. But the fight is far from over. With our new booklet, Why We're Pro-Life, we have produced the perfect tool to prepare you to have peaceful and convincing conversations to shed light on the truth about human life from conception to natural death. Catholic Answers is printing millions of copies of this booklet, and we plan simply to give them away. You can help us in two ways. First, by generously supporting this project. 25 cents prints one book. $2,500 prints 10,000, and so on. Second, by helping us distribute the booklet through your parish, your school, or the pro-life ministry you work with. Catholic Answers is going to blanket the country with Why We're Pro-Life. But only if you step up and help us. Thank you so much. For more information, visit whyweareprolife.com.
Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live flannel panel. I'm Cy Kelly, your host, Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, our guest. We're just talking a little bit about Archbishop Paglia, and then there's the thing with there's an actual trial going on, a criminal trial of a cardinal. Or is he a cardinal?
Cardinal Becciu. Cardinal Becciu.
But he's not like allowed to do cardinal stuff right now, right? He's like suspended cardinal.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know, actually. I suspect that's probably the case.
But... Oh, yeah. And this also, I mean, JD and Ed did that report, a lot of good reporting on this over at the Pillar. But I don't know, it has a kind of Martin Luther feel, you know, at the time where people were so outraged, they would go to Rome and they would see the horrors of the way that the leaders of the church lived. Do you get that impression, Joe, or no?
Yeah, it's almost like there are a lot of people in Rome who aren't traditionalists who have nevertheless taken the worst parts of like the Renaissance and restored them.
they went with the wrong traditions, is what you're saying?
Yes, they went with the decadence. Yeah. They didn't go with any of the beautiful art and architecture or any of the inspiring calls to holiness. They just went with like the bad guys from history.
Yeah, like even Cardinal Borghese knew to patronize Bernini and get all those awesome statues.
Well, maybe that's what Archbishop Paglia was doing when he thought that he was doing when he patronized the artist who painted the naked people
we haven't even talked about the worst of the scandals.
Please tell us
the Father Rupnik scandal.
Right. Oh, say something about that. Yeah.
So this is just a monstrous case. A Slovenian Jesuit, right, who is a world famous artist, He's the one who did the art for the Year for Faith. You know, if you remember the three-eyed Jesus, it's like Jesus and a man who's, you know, there's a lot of criticism for the really weird style of art that he has.
It's horrible. His art is horrible.
It's on the cover of the missal right now.
It's bad art. It's horrible art.
Okay. All right.
Well, yeah, it just was revealed that the Jesuits had covered up that he'd been the priest for a religious community of women, and he'd preyed upon these nuns and had these really like sexually inappropriate, probably just full-on sexual relationships with like 20 of them.
Well, and by the way, using his role as confessor and spiritual director, director and making this weird amalgamation of spirituality and sexual congress, and these poor girls, one in particular,
really
horrible victims.
It wasn't just like a human slip up. It was like really kind of a blasphemous spirituality.
Yes,
where he kissed one of them and said it was like kissing the altar.
Totally predatory and blasphemous. Yes. Why is he still a priest?
He used the. Well, that's a great question. Yeah. He was excommunicated because you have an automatic excommunication when you absolve an accomplice. So if you have an affair as a priest, you cannot give absolution to cover up your sin.
Right.
Like, they have to go to someone else, because otherwise, and that's explicitly forbidden, to stop this kind of abuse of your sacramental authority as a priest. And so he was automatically excommunicated, and within a month, the Jesuits lifted it. And they kept all this stuff very secret, very much under wraps, did very little to reach out to anyone or to see if there were any other women who'd been preyed upon and abused. And in the midst of all of this, someone high ranking in the Vatican invited him, while he's being investigated, to come and speak to the Curia for a Lenten retreat. I mean, it just is unbelievably tone deaf would be the most charitable word to use here.
Yeah, it's so far beyond tone deaf.
To be so indifferent to the suffering of so many women, it just really is stomach turning. And you just think, could this priest possibly believe in God? I mean, there's something just so deeply sociopathic about his behavior.
Right. The same question you asked about the Cardinal McCarrick when he was cardinal, where you just thought, how can a person behave like this if they believe in God?
Can I offer a shot at answering that question?
Yeah.
The devil is, I would make a lousy devil, I think, because if I had people working for me, I'd throw them a bone every now and then. But instead, what the devil really loves to do is humiliate and degrade his own. So people will, and then at some point, the vanity, the narcissism, will overtake the person, and he'll spend €500,000 that was money that was supposed to go to the poor to remodel his apartment or whatever. But by that point, his vanity, his narcissism, his pride, his understanding of himself, his distorted understanding of himself, has the devil has just continued to encourage this to the point where the guy eventually is going to humiliate himself. Horribly, but the devil doesn't care.
No,
he actually rejoices.
Yeah,
he rejoices in the humiliation of the people who have been serving him.
Yeah, right.
It's a warning. It's a warning to all of us.
How are these people making it to the top positions in the church? That's what's bothering me. Like, this priest who did these things and then is invited to give a retreat at the Vatican. I mean, I know people who could give a great retreat at the Vatican. They're not getting invited.
Cy Kellett.
No, I could. Yeah, it would be like the best retreat ever if I did it.
I'm imagining you trying to speak Italian and just like the embarrassing hand motions as you pantomime what you imagine man sounds like.
Right. I just put the letter O on the end of all my words. Do you see what I'm saying? Is like at a certain point, it's fair for the faithful to ask, how does this keep happening?
Right.
That these are not just, there's a bad priest somewhere here. This is at the highest levels. No, the second highest levels of the church, because I don't think that we have this had this problem in recent decades or centuries, maybe even with popes. But people at very high levels in the church really misbehaving really, really badly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
In a very wicked way.
So tell me, Joe, how's it happened? You've been in Rome.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. It's something that I think is something that I've grappled with myself. I mean, in the Father Repnik case, he was basically kicked out of his community in Slovenia because of his behavior. and ended up going to Rome. You just think, like, that's not how you solve this. You don't just give the guy a raise to get him out of your hair. But I think there's a certain element of that, like, make him somebody else's problem. And that's an alarming kind of trend. The other thing is, I mean, it's weird to say this, but in some ways, Italy is it's a city. And so rising through the ranks as a priest in one city is not actually as hard as it sounds. Like, if you speak Italian, if you are charming and affable, which a lot of sociopaths are, it's actually not that difficult in the city of Rome, it seems, to get connected with very powerful people and to kind of rise through the ranks. And then I think on top of it all, it's hard to overstate, and I think people underestimate, the sheer level of just incompetence within the Vatican. And I don't mean that as a moral judgment. I just mean, like, things don't run well at all. And the one example I'd use is I once received, as a seminarian in Rome, mail that was intended for the Secretariat of State. And I just thought, that's not a good sign. Like, shouldn't be confusing.
Was there 5 million in euros in the envelope, Sai?
You know, I didn't check. I could have really renovated my seminary room, and they would have probably caught on. Yeah. But I went over and hand-delivered it. It was just like...
Well, Joe,
you could ask in a lot of ways the same questions about Washington, right? Like, at the end of the day, it's kind of a small town, and it's got a small town feel, and so everybody knows everybody, and you can get a lot further there than if you're at the other end of the world trying your hardest to be a holy and faithful priest.
There's probably a lot of money involved too, though. I mean, money is very corrupting.
It is.
And there's a lot of money makes its way through Rome and through the Vatican City. But having worked for the church for large parts of my life, it is a church of amateurs. People are priests because they the old meaning of the word amateur for the love of it, and it's not a church of professionals in most of places. As much as we want to say, we have professional standards and all that, the only people who are in to doing these things are people who just do it for the love of it, and that, a lot of them are not that good at it. I mean, a lot of us are not that good at it. You know,
I think it's very true. And I mean, this is one of the kind of constant problems, is wanting to hold everyone to just even having worldly wisdom. I would love it if everyone acted in a really holy way, but even if they just acted in a smart way, that'd be a good start.
Like,
these scandals are these incredible kind of own goals. Like, you didn't have to do this. It would not have been hard to just say, hey, stop doing this. You can't be a priest anymore. Sorry. Bye.
Yeah.
That would not have been, you know,
I
don't know how easy that is as a solution. That seems really easy. And yet we kind of bring these scandals upon ourselves. And
again,
so I don't know.
Again.
I mean, there is that element. The amateurishness is, I think, a good insight. I always go back to the example of, like, go to almost any church website and you just think, like, oh, like, a company would never survive if this was the quality of what they were presenting to the public.
Have you ever noticed that you can go to a lot of church websites? There's only one piece of information anyone wants from a church website.
Yeah, mass confession times.
And on a good 70% of parish websites, you can't figure it out.
No.
Like,
it's incredible.
And there's
a
button
I mean.
On there that says sacraments. So you go, well, at Mass, they're going to celebrate a sacrament. I'll click on that. It's got nothing to do with Mass times.
No.
It's got preparation for confirmation.
It's just telling you about other sacraments.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Like,
yeah.
Why can we not just have a church website that tells you the stuff that the people in the church want to know? Instead of, I mean, obviously, clearly, the pastor's letter has to be the number one thing that just pops up. And you know, there's no problem finding that. But if I want to know what time to go to Mass, I got to be a computer genius on these.
Yes. I'll just say this for anyone who's listening who has anything to do with church websites. Here's the information we want: the parish name, address, phone number, Mass times.
And confession times.
Any special news
and
confession times.
Confession times.
And any special news for that week. Like, oh, inclement weather, we're not having Mass today. There's a holiday. Yeah. Update that. It's one page. We do not need buttons. We do not need pictures from the parish picnic 8 years ago. We don't need any of it. Stop all of that stuff. One page. I don't want to click on anything. I want to immediately have it, and that's it.
There is a solution to this, by the way, and it was put together by some professionals.
What's it?
Masstimes.org.
Oh yeah, yeah, that is good.
It will find you where you are.
Yeah.
Where you can put in your zip code, and you can filter by time of day, by sacrament.
Right.
So mass or confession.
But I do think that Joe's pointing to the parish website is a good point. You want to know the level that the church is operating on. Yeah. On her, you know, look at the standard that we have for our websites. Yeah. And a lot of them would be a great website if it was 1995. You know, they would be like, wow, that's like a miracle of a good website for 1995.
Look at the quality of the catechetical materials that are approved by the USCCB or published by the USCCB compared to the sorts of things that, you know, so for example, Catholic Answers or Augustine Institute or Sophia Institute Press.
Yeah, you're right.
Well,
you're
I was going to say, in terms of church websites, as bad as American ones are, Italian ones are somehow worse, where they just won't have the mass times anywhere at all. It's not like you have to go looking for – they just don't exist. And sometimes when you go to the web pages, music will randomly start playing and you don't know where it's coming from or how to turn it off. Yeah. And it's just like this terrible like MIDI music that, you know, the kind of – what you'd find on a web page in the late 90s. It's astonishing. It really is.
I have to say too though that we who work in either church ministry directly for the church, which I have done but no longer do, or work indirectly, you know, in apostolates like this, there is always the temptation – to think, I'm doing this for Jesus, therefore I really don't have to do a very good job on it. I don't know why we have that psychology, but we don't have the, you know, like, what's the guy that invented Apple Computer? And he always used to say, make it insanely great, right? You would think we would say, I'm doing this for Jesus, I got to make this insanely great. But what we actually say is, I'm doing this for Jesus. Maybe it's because we think, well, he'll understand if I really put half effort into this.
There's a kind of a mediocrity in a lot of this. Not so much now. I think architecture has taken a turn from the really bad time.
I think architecture is definitely getting better in churches.
Yeah,
without question.
But I mean, the post-conciliar period up through the 80s. Was a horrible, horrible time for architecture. And
even before that, like 50s churches tend to be pretty ugly.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. They tend to be cruciform, I guess.
There's quite a few towns in San Diego County where the ugliest building in the town is the Catholic Church.
El Cajon?
And is El Cajon one of those? Oh, I know the church you're talking about.
It's my parish.
It's a lovely community, but
it
Lord,
is great pastor.
That's not how you use concrete.
No.
That is not how
well,
you use concrete.
Well, if you're building a bomb shelter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Corbusier. He would love it. If you want to get in the conversation, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. We're wearing flannel because it's the flannel panel. And I felt so touched this morning that Jordan, the newest employee here, wore flannel to support us, knowing that we were going to do the flannel panel. Jordan, thanks for wearing the flannel and supporting us.
Of course. Is my mic on?
Yeah, your mic's on. Yeah. Her headphones don't work. Because if it's worth it, we're doing it for Jesus.
Can I
so we don't need
say
to make the headphones
if
work.
If people would just go to givecatholic.com right now, then we could buy a set of headphones for Jordan.
Well, This is true.
Jordan is in our development department. Maybe you're the one who should have said that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. So how long have you been here at Catholic Answers? It's just
about
a matter of weeks now.
2.5 weeks.
2.5 weeks.
Yeah, I'm brand new.
And how are you finding it? Is it okay?
I'm loving it.
Okay.
This is the place to be.
It is.
Yeah, I'm very grateful to be here.
And what do you think of our standards? We were just talking about mediocrity in the Catholic Church.
I mean, I definitely think that our website sets the bar. It's a little better than some of the parish websites. I agree with you. They could be better. The sacrament tab always gets me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But when you come into work, you see me working an 8-hour day every day.
Oh my
day,
gosh,
right?
Si.
Yeah,
you work the hardest out of everybody.
That's what I wanted to hear. Yeah. All right, we'll be right back. Thanks for wearing the flannel to support
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate that. I want to get on the conversation. 888-318-7884. More news of the world from a Catholic perspective with the flannel panel right after this.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Want the latest pro-life news? Want it delivered? Sign up. It's free. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, your source for everything happening now in the fight to protect the sanctity of human life. New episodes delivered every week to your inbox. So if you really want to know,
sign up today.
Go to EWTN.com/pro-life today.
Bill Coleman back to Catholic Answers Live. It's the flannel panel. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. Chris Check, our guest. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. And we're doing the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. And got a little depressing there for a minute, but we'll try to bring that up by talking about American politics in a minute. That always cheers everybody up. Jordan.
Yes.
How many segments are you staying for?
No,
I'm just mad at you right now because they gave you one of my cameras.
Oh,
and I
which one do I look
at? It's hard
at?
For me to do the show without three cameras on me. But yeah, that one. They got that one on you. Yeah, there's Jordan.
Cy, as you know, when we bring a new team member here at Catholic Answers, I visit with them.
Yeah.
I trust David Matheson's judgment that Jordan will be good at raising money for Catholic Answers, and I think it's a great gift and opportunity to be able to do that work, to support the good work that we do. But for my part, I want to get to know this new soul who's going to be working with us, and really find out how much, insofar as I can, and it reveals itself over time, but how much they love Jesus.
Yeah.
And Jordan's a young lady. I mean, I know you're not supposed to ask a woman her age, but she's quite, you're just like fresh out of college. Like you're.
I'm a little past college.
Yeah, not much.
5 years.
Okay, so that gives you.
The older you get, the more that is just out of college.
Like, you're right. I'm just a little younger than you, Cy.
Well, Jordan, I already like her a lot.
So very, very mature young lady and with a serious interior life. And,
yeah.
I was very, very struck by a number of things that Jordan said when we were talking, but in particular, her devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus,
to which
you have a very, very, very deep devotion. And I was very moved by our conversation. And I said, this is exactly the person we want to hear Catholic Answers. So very grateful to have her.
Thank you, Chris.
We're glad you're here. So, like,
very happy to be here.
Raise some money, though. Let's hear how you do it. Raise some money.
Right now?
Yeah, raise some money. Come on.
All right. So, Chris just said we needed everybody to go to give/Catholic.com.
No.
GiveCatholic.com. I'm already messing it up. I'm brand new. Everybody give me a little break.
Yeah.
Because we need new headphones, but now they're working. And so, that looks a little hypocritical, but... That doesn't mean you shouldn't still go to the website.
But how long will
they
work for, Jordan? There's no guarantees.
You're right.
These
they
old
could go out
raggedy
at any
headphones
moment.
We got.
I think Catholic Answers is looking for a new Christmas present, new headphones.
Thanks. Thank you very much. And this is a giving time of year, right?
People and those headphones cost about $250,000 each, right? You forgot to add that.
We're looking for about...
Exactly. We're getting some good headphones.
Four new headphones would be great.
Right. That's here we go.
So one pair of headphones will do one Cardinal's apartment, half of one Cardinal's apartment?
Exactly.
Okay.
Wow. Right.
Sorry. Well, all right, we're going to move on. I'm going to segue. This is one thing.
Can I just say that, Chris is officially better than the devil in terms of managerial styles.
He is. He's definitely better than the devil. Yeah. Yes.
I don't want to be too flattering.
I agree with that. He's a better manager than the devil. That's a very well said, Joe. We set a high standard.
Can I put that on my LinkedIn page?
Yeah. Right. And then put in quote marks with Joe Heschmeyer.
Yeah.
I want to ask you guys about the Pope's resignation letter. Did you know that the Pope signed a resignation letter? How did you feel
when
about
this? When you sent me that, I want to just tell everyone listening, Cy sends me an email that has one line that says, we should talk about the Pope's resignation letter. And I had not heard anything about this. And that is kind of an alarming one-sentence email.
Oh, sorry about that, Joe. I didn't think that through.
You hear about the Pope's resignation letter? Well, just to, if anyone is having a heart attack on the road, he did not resign. He had a resignation letter prepared for when he was in getting some medical stuff done in 2013, I believe, that is in the hands of his number two or number three guy. just in case he ever became incapacitated. And I think there was a similar thing that Pius XII did when Hitler was kind of at the door.
Oh, Pius XII did, yes.
Yeah, and so it's not unheard of, although it's very rare for us to kind of hear of it publicly, of a pope having that kind of exigency plan.
Well, the person said it to said, well, do you want this to be known publicly? And the pope's response was, that's why I'm saying it, which I thought was, that's pretty big. That's interview 101. But why, though?
Well, I don't know if you've seen any other interviews he's done.
Yeah, you never know what he's going to say, I guess. Yeah, he is a wild interviewer.
Sometimes it just seems like he says it and then afterwards decides, like, well, should I have said it quite like that?
Well,
which I do the same. I don't mean that as a
also, really maybe that's the wrong question day. To ask why the Pope would say it publicly now. Maybe it's just it comes up and he says it. He does seem sometimes to be a person who just, I was thinking of it, so I said it.
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into it. I think, you know, people have been predicting the Pope's resignation for almost his entire pontificate, and they've been wrong every time.
Well, wait a second now. Let's not blame people for that. He said when he came a few years, and then
I'm going to go get a pizza.
No, he just
that is what he said.
I didn't know that.
He said he regretted that he couldn't just walk into town and get a pizza, something like that. Somebody asked him about, you know, resigning. He said, well, it'd be nice to be able to just walk into town and get a pizza.
So probably some of the speculation on his resignation comes from the fact that he's a controversial pope in many circles. So, you know, you're not going to like somebody who's just like, I don't know, doesn't generate that kind of controversy is not going to have the people attending to it in quite the, well, when's he going to resign? Right. But also he has said things that make you think, well, he's not,
he keeps
saying like, oh, a few years. And
I'm just telling people don't panic. Don't get your hopes up. However you'd respond to that.
Hopes up.
I wouldn't put in a lot of eggs in the basket of a resignation one way or the other.
Yeah.
Should I provide like a similar letter, Cy? I give it to you if I ever just demonstrate incompetence or cowardice.
I'm not sure if you want Cy being the one judging if you.
Oh, quiet, Joe. Quiet. Take Joe's microphone down. Yes, you should give that letter to me.
Keep that.
You should put it in
desk drawer.
My hands. Yeah. Yes. Just leave the date blank, and
right.
I can date it whenever I want. Yeah. Don't give it to Siobhan because she is trying to take your job. She wants you out of here. The number's 888.
Boy, talk about somebody who's a better manager than the devil.
Yeah, Siobhan's great. We have had a lot of. She came this year, right?
Yeah.
This is. We've had a very good year for hires.
Yes.
For Catholic Answers. Way God's better than
very,
last year.
He sends
year.
Us good people. God sends us good people.
Yeah. Did you hear what I said, Joe? Way better than last year?
I get it now. Last year was definitely in terms of quantity. I'll give you that.
Right. Because a lot of people have left and new people have come. And, all right, so that's it on the Pope's resignation letter, because I'm going to move on unless you guys got anything else on the Pope's resignation letter. I do think it's a good idea. I think he should do it because, really, the church could get stuck, especially with, like, the machines that people get put on when at the end of life nowadays. The church could get stuck without a pope for a long time if that wasn't.
It's a weird thing to have kind of like a papal advance directive, but it kind of
it makes sense.
I mean, because we are in a situation, I guess, yeah, we're in a situation where lifespan is longer than ever before in human history by a good chunk. And so popes are alive, and the prospect of a pope having serious mental deterioration or being in a vegetative state or any number of other kind of situations where he can't do the job of governance well.
Can I say there's a little incongruity here. When you're a bishop, you have to resign at 75.
Yeah.
And if you're on the College of Cardinals at 80, you may no longer vote. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet you can hold the office of a job that carries with it a great deal more responsibility than the first two that I mentioned until death. Now, I get that. And
well,
I'm,
there's no
I'm
way
not,
to change the legislation on that because the Pope is the legislator.
I'm not saying. Listen, I'm just saying maybe there ought to be more latitude. For example, I hope I can make competent decisions when I'm 75 or even 80.
Yeah, but it would be interesting to have,
as unlikely as that may sound,
a common practice in the church that, okay, if you make it to, I don't know, 90. That you resign, and that would give.
Or maybe it should be more fluid based on the circumstances. Who knows?
I didn't do American politics because I didn't feel we had time, but there's some important stuff to talk about. What's going on here in the United States? The flannel panel, uniquely unqualified to talk about American politics, but we could talk about the moral side of it, not the political side or the sociological side, but we'll get into the morals of some of what's going on in politics. as we continue with the Flannel Panel right after this on Catholic Answers Live.